You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Token Theater Friends. I am Andrew Kendall, film analyst, professor, and critic.
My name is Grayson Abreu Nunez, and I am a theater maker, dramaturg, and critic.
Welcome to the podcast, indeed. So, Grayson, you seem like the excellent person to do this podcast with me. We're talking about two movies that are based on plays that are based on movies. That are based on books, exactly. So we are looking at Mean Girls 2024 and The Color Purple 2023, two fairly successful Broadway musicals. I mean, one more than the other, but it's kind of interesting having them both come up at the same time with that one-to-one-to-one-to-one kind of trajectory.
Right. No, it's very, it makes me think of Plato a lot in the sense of like these movie adaptations of musicals that are adaptations of movies that are adaptations
that are
of books.
Of book.
It's like, what is the real thing? What is the source? But
yeah, and I mean, it's always kind of fun watching different ways that, you know, film or theater comes to being, you know, like movies based on comic books, plays based on paintings. But it's interesting having, you know, these films pop up, especially when so much of the conversation so much is about what's going on in Hollywood. Are we making new movies? Are we recycling old things? So I think that it's kind of an interesting time having them come up, whether or not they're good. There's that long history attached to them.
That is true. They are, I would, for some might consider some of these movies cult classes, or their prior iterations cult classes. Like Mean Girls is definitely a cult classic for those the early 2000s. And then The Color Purple was
It is an actual classic.
Mm-hmm. And what's so surprising is that I think they both coming out at the times that they've coming out now is they're very much in dialogue with each other. And it's so beautiful what you had written about, like, what do these plays mean about feminism now? I think when we think of Mean Girls and how of women reclaiming power and of people reclaiming their power, as well as Color Purple, who's with the book that it's based off, Alice Walker, she even coins the term womanism, which like separates itself from feminism. And I think that's so lovely because both of these works try to uplift women and try to examine the complexities of their relationships. And when we think about what Hollywood is trying to say and how Hollywood is trying to step into the times.
And I think, of course, even beyond the themes, I mean, the first thing that you think about when you hear these movies are they're both musicals. And I mean, even though musicals are as old as Hollywood is, I feel like there's still this weirdness about them. I mean, like currently in film social media, there's a conversation about the new film Joker 2. With Lady mm-hmm. Gaga, Harley Quinn, which we have heard is a musical. But then there was a release today from someone in the, I think it was the director or the cinematographer, saying it's not a musical, it's just a movie with music. And I keep on thinking about how weird people are about musicals. I feel like you are going to find people who are happy and even like indignant about saying, you know, they won't watch a musical, or, you know, they can't stand musicals, even mm-hmm. though there's no one thing to define the musical. And especially for a lot of people coming to these movies with no context of Broadway, like there are a number of persons I know who went to these movies and said they didn't know it was a musical. You kind of think, how did they miss, you know, the advertising or anything? But like the people who genuinely are thinking, why did you make this great movie into a musical, not realizing that, you know, an entire theater world out there exists and people are doing things with the musicals? I mean, for you as somebody who's a theater maker, like, do you find movie musical people sometimes resistant to what you might do with the theater or like the power of any kind of drama?
I think in general, there's an it's an issue about accessibility. People's accessibility to musicals and even theater and drama in general is very limited. I was born and raised in New York, and so having Broadway a few stops on the subway away from me is one thing, but to someone who doesn't necessarily have a big regional theater or doesn't have a commercial theater nearby, their idea of musical theater can often come from education. Our first point of contact with musicals or plays are like in middle school or in high school where there's a theater club and someone's putting on a production of West Side Story or The Pajama Game or these musicals that don't feel necessarily connect, that these kids might or students might not necessarily connect with. And so what is so great about having movie musicals is that it gives a wider audience the chance to see a musical. I think that was why with the Hamilton phenomenon, when they recorded a production of it and they streamed it, it was so big because then everyone could finally see Hamilton. And instead of having to pay hundreds of dollars for a theater ticket in New York, people could watch it from the comfort of their own homes.
And that's a good point to bring into the question of, you know, accessibility. Because we've got these two fairly popular, I mean, they're not quite IP movies, but they have a branded name. So for those of you who are unfamiliar, need to re-jog your memory. Mean Girls is a musical based on the play, based on the movie, based on a nonfiction text, actually, about, I think it's called Queen Bees and Wannabes. So it's 2004 comedy written by Tina Fey. And, you know, back when Lindsay Lohan was the leading teen girl actress. And it's about a girl who's been homeschooled her entire life, adapting to the dog-eat-dog culture of, you know, high school girl clique. You know, I think for people my age, you know, early 30s, like Mean Girls is one of those, you know, essential teen movies. It's like the previous generation's Heathers, for example. So there's definitely that, you know, fun thing about talking about accessibility because most persons weren't able to see the fairly successful Broadway play, which closed just before COVID. So, you know, they've kind of updated the movie. There's a lot of like referenced things like Instagram and like current culture. And so we've got that kind of updated version of the musical for, you know, this century. The question is do these audience, you know, want a musical? And our second film is, of course, The Excellent The Color Purple, which follows Feely, who is an abused woman with a very abusive husband who has been separated from her sister and who is able to find herself, her sexuality and her identity over a decades long, you know, saga of, you know, strength and resilience of Black women. And so,
exactly.
Yeah. And like one thing I was thinking is that even though it's not, we've seen many Black musicals, there is that sense also that they are generally quite rare to have like a midge. What's the last Black musical you can think of? Dreamgirls.
That was a movie.
Exactly. Dreamgirls. It was a movie. That's almost 20 years ago. It's 18 years ago. That's a very long time. But there have been musicals between that. So I think that in both cases, you're seeing properties that don't really get the movie musical treatment as much. Like, what's the last teen musical you can think of? I can't think of any off the top of my head. So we're kind of seeing...
What prom?
Okay. The prom, yeah, sort of. I mean, of course, it wasn't a cinema release.
It wasn't a box office success. It hasn't gone very far. But I think within the theater community and within young theater goers and young artists, prom or young teens, prom was a big deal. They were like, something that I can now add to my book, something that I can now use as like material that relates to me. I think it's, again, that sort of accessibility.
A really great jumping off point, though, because I mean, I think one thing that kind of the question of, you know, what does streaming mean for cinema is a really big conversation. But do you think that, you know, the problem was kind of hampered by being on Netflix and not, you know, being a theater phenomenon? Like would it have benefited, do you think, from being released in cinemas or not so much?
I think what works on streaming also has to do with the buzz, the marketing, and also what it comes with. With Prom was like beloved by theater goers and people who are already familiar with the who were familiar with it, and that's also
it was
a
like
very
a niche
niche
property in a
market.
Way. Yeah,
exactly. Whereas, let's say Hamilton, which it didn't have a theatrical release, it went straight to Disney. But Hamilton already had a buzz. Everyone was going to see Hamilton. The Obamas were going to see Hamilton. Everyone's dying to get a ticket. And so when they announced that it was coming to streaming, I think it not only encouraged people to like get a Disney Plus subscription, because I don't think before that people were getting Disney Plus subscriptions, but that was definitely an incentive. And
I
so,
know, also, you know, just around the time we were, you know, getting into the pandemic, so there was a lot of incentive to be at home. So,
exactly.
Different time also.
It was a missed opportunity, I think. Or maybe not a missed opportunity for Prom, but it wasn't a pop culture phenomenon as where it was a theatrical phenomenon.
So now we have a film like Mean Girls, which is based on a film that was a phenomenon. Like, I mean, Mean Girls is in the, you know, pop culture lexicon. You know, Not So Fetch has, you know, become part of
You Go
pop
Gang
culture.
Coco.
Exactly. So, I mean, in one way, this new Mean Girls is sort of, you know, coming with a built-in audience. And yet I sort of feel that the actual, you know, development and film that we get kind of feels like it sort of drops the ball a little bit with, I don't know, like all of that goodwill. And I mean, for me, it's coming to like one of the initial points of comparison, the two movies, which is The Leeds. And I feel like for me, Mean Girls immediately is fighting a difficult battle because we don't have Lindsay Lohan in the lead in it. And I think that people really undervalue how much work she's doing in the original film. Like, I mean, Katie is not the most interesting character. She's a straight man. Among the more interesting, you know, Gretchen's all, you know, crazy. Regina's, you know, this ice queen. Janice is, you know, very mercurial. But Lindsay Lohan is charming to watch.
She's America's sweetheart.
Yeah, she was. And we don't have a Lindsay Lohan of this generation. We just don't. We don't have somebody in that teen bracket with that kind of goodwill, I think. And if we do, it's definitely not Angourie Rice who's playing her in Mean Girls and who is, it's just not working for me. I mean, like, what are your thoughts on Angourie Rice in Mean Girls?
Angourie Rice had big shoes to fill. Not gonna hold you. She had big shoes to fill. But I think it's hard because of the way social media has evolved and the idea of celebrity has evolved. We don't have any Lindsay Lohans. We don't have Ashley Tisdale. We don't have Vanessa Hudgens. We don't have these. We have, well, I don't want to say that because I think a great example of a modern day one who is still kind of like in this sort of like Disney Channel profile is, this musician, what is her name? She was in the High School Musical, the musical series.
Olivia Rodrigo, yes.
There we go.
Olivia Rodrigo, yes. But
Gen
I mean, she
Z,
doesn't do as much
I'm
acting.
sorry.
She doesn't do as much acting. She's, you know, I mean, it's a good point, though. Like, I'd forgotten that Olivia Rodrigo actually started in acting. And she would have been like an obvious person to be in Mean Girl, thinking about it now, actually. Like, I mean, she can sing, you know, she has the name recognition. Because, I mean, like, when Mean Girls came out in 2004, Lindsay Lohan was already famous. Like that was one of her last, like, you know, important roles. And I feel that this Mean Girls is already kind of working with a demerit because it doesn't have anybody of that level to like immediately buy in. Like we buy Kaylee's journey because we like Lindsay Lohan. So like immediately we're there, we're sold. And I feel like it's there's so much time in the new Mean Girls, which doesn't even know Miss Katie, which we'll get to, that I feel like it just kind of sets her up to not be as interesting, especially considering how the rest of the film kind of like, you know, looks at the
Plays
dynamics of the
out.
girls. Yeah.
I think what happened, I think there are two, there are so many battles that Mean Girls has to, or that this adaptation of Mean Girls has to face. Katie not having a necessarily a well-known star is the lesser battles, if you know what I, if
Well,
yeah, no,
fair.
it's the
There's
lesser
so many
battle.
other things to deal with.
Because when we think about the Mean Girls that we know from 2004, and we think about it in today, in 2024, it is white girls battling for power in a rigid social hierarchy. To young audience and to teen audiences who are this is like going towards, they're not, I think if they try to replicate something like that, or if they try to not continue with a more conscious casting that they chose, I feel like the casting that they chose was a bit more conscious of what a high school looks like versus what America and what producers sold high school to be as in the early 2000s. And so within that fight, Katie is not interesting.
Yeah, fair. And I mean,
Unfortunately.
and as the lead character, it kind of changes the dynamic. And it's interesting because even though nominally Katie's the lead of Mean Girls, the 2004 movie, I think since it's a Broadway iteration, most of the focus has been on Regina. And it kind of makes sense for this adaptation because one thing that I found really interesting about The Color Purple and Mean Girls is that the lead performer in both of them actually played the character on Broadway. Not as the original cast member, but as a replacement. Like Fantasia Barrino, who plays Celie in Color Purple, was a replacement for LaShawn's in the original production of Color Purple, like in early 2000s, not even talking about the newer version. And Renee Rapp, you know, replaced, I can't remember the name of the lovely girl, she was on Bring It On, but she replaced her in Mean Girls. So I thought it was interesting having both leads in both movies kind of be women who'd actually played the role on stage, as well as playing it on the movies. And like when you look at Fantasia versus Renee, like how do you think they hold up in terms of, you know, balancing that, you know, weight of the transition on their shoulders?
I think, well, when we think of when Fantasia stepped into the role of Color Purple, she was a cho well, she was an interesting choice, and she was a great choice for the role. When it was on Broadway, because she had just gotten from American Idol, she sort of had this sort of attention garnered around her. So
Yeah.
it was like a very easy buy to get tickets and audience sales to like come see this show. When we already sort of see, and even like in the theater world, shows that are majority Black casted or shows that feature a Black ensemble do not sell the way other shows do. And so I think she held that, she took on that way, and she did it so beautifully then. And to see her reprise this role was a sort of another reason to go see this show, because not only did she reprise this show was a star-studded ensemble. Like, it's her, it's Danielle Brooks, it's Coleman Domingo, it's Taraji, it's Halle. And Sierra, it's
It's
her.
Louis Gossett Jr., it's her. I mean, there it's just
David Alan Greer,
it's a
like
strong
the
cast.
list goes on. So who, like, I think the pressure was on, I think the pressure was on not just because she was reprising this role, but because who's around her? Who's like, who's the ensemble? And I think this ensemble worked beautifully. And when we think about the ensemble of Mean Girls, what is also kind of lovely and refreshing is like, while Renee Rapp had already done this role before, I think this brought Renee Rapp to new audiences.
Mm-hmm. Because most people who don't know her from theater might know her from Mindy Kaling's show on her music. Yeah.
Exactly. Not to mention the entire cast as well. They are, besides the cameos from original members of the movie, like Tina Fey, Tim Meadows, Lindsay Lohan.
They're not as named persons as the Color Purple cast. They're now developing. I mean, Angry Rice is probably the most famous one, and she's not very famous. So I think it was interesting having, you know, these now developing stars, you know, showing their talents to the world.
And I wanted to give a shout out to the casting director for Mean Girls, because it gave a lot of people opportunities, or it gave a lot of people opportunities to be seen by new audiences, which is something that, especially with movie musicals, we don't often get the chance to see, because musicals are such a hard sell, I think, to the general public. My friends, when I told them that I went to go see the re-release of Mean Girls, they were just like, why would you go see that? It's the original, like, you have to love the original. And not to mention, when I told them that it was a musical, they were so appalled. They were like, what? I will never step into the theater to see a musical. And what's so funny is that you go to mention, so many of these songs were cut. And also, in the trailers, it's very lightly touched upon and hardly even mentioned that it is a musical. And I think, that was a very smart choice on parts of, if it was marketed as a musical, people would be very apprehensive about going to see
it. But is it? But sometimes I wonder if it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, though. I mean, if you're going to make a musical, just stand on business and make a fucking musical. Like, I mean, I don't want to see, you know, your trailers with nary a song. I think about this, like, do I think about the Oscars, for example, which is a weird compartment to explain. Like, people are always saying every year that the Oscars don't get viewers, which, you know, fair enough. And they keep trying to court people who don't like watching the Oscars to come and watch them. They never come. When they have a built-in set of people who like watching award shows, just cater to the people that like your product. There are more weirdos out there, trust me. But it always feels so like half-assed when like you want to do the thing, but then you also want to get people who don't like the thing. And if I like the thing, I'm going to be like, you know, why are you embarrassed to, you know, loudly, you know, say I'm making a musical. This is going to be big and loud and, you know, all of these crazy things. Because I feel like, you know, build, I don't want to go off Field of Dreams here, but if you build it, they might come. I really think that they might come.
Work. I think they will. The musical theater geeks are gonna come out in droves, but I think those who are interested in musicals need a way in, and they need a chance. And I think Mean Girls is an interesting example of a show that took a chance on cutting back music and not emphasizing the fact that it's a musical, to see if musicals can open up for a new audience and if new audiences can enjoy a musical. Because I'm not gonna hold you, as a theater lover, music, as I have matured in my theater going experience, musicals give me some cringe. I experience a little cringe when I think about musical theaters. And when I think about musical theater, and not because I hate musicals, I love a good musical. I'm also so excited. I was looking at what other musicals are coming out or movie musicals that are coming out. And of course, we're all excited about Wicked. And like the trailer came out, and if you haven't seen the trailer, go see the trailer. What
This
are you
was not
waiting
paid by
for?
the act team of Wicked.
Come on now, but go see the trailer. But then I was seeing things that are in pre-production, and so many musicals that aren't necessarily household names, like Bear. The Bear is happening, and that just made my like teen gay heart flutter. I also Spring Awakening, which is going to be another interesting adaptation. If you know Spring,
it's also a teen musical.
Also a teen musical. Also interesting to see how that musical has aged, because we are in a very different time in how we depict, how we explore issues that might that require triggers, like sexual assault, abuse, so on and so forth.
Queerness,
but...
and especially with, you know, teen characters. And I think that's one thing that immediately, you know, establishes the difference between Color Purple and Mean Girls, because the Color Purple is a period novel and the adaptation keeps that period. Mean Girls doesn't stick to the period. It's the story updated to 2024. And so we've got things like smartphones, we've got things like Instagram, we've got different language, we've got different, like you're mentioning, different ideas and responses to triggers and whatnot. So it's not sticking to 2004, which would have been interesting in a way, thinking, you know, like, what would a 2024 vision of that time look like? But it's doing it now. And I guess the in your point towards musicals and accessibility, how do you think, I mean, we can talk about how it plays for us in a bit, but how do you think this audience today is responding to something like Mean Girls? Do you think the movie is, you know, selling itself enough to that audience? Or does it still feel like it's kept back for whatever reason?
I think it's selling to everyone in a way that when you sort of sell to, or like when you try to sell it to a larger audience, people from a wider demographic will like bite, but I don't know if people are coming out in droves. So the people who are diehard fans of Mean Girls, they're gonna come out, but the people who are diehard fans of Mean Girls, but who are sort of like purists, might not. But it is that sort of, oh, but I have to see it, because if I see it and it's bad, I'm gonna hate on it. Because one thing people love to do, people love to critique. People love to give their two cents.
So where do you stand in the Mean Girls trajectory? Like, are you a diehard fan of the movie or the original movie or the play? And what do you think of this one? Like, what are your thoughts on this movie? Do you like it? Do you not like it?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I am a diehard fan of the original. I wasn't a teen when the original came out. I was quite young. I was maybe like 7, 8, 10. And I was watching...
God.
And I was watching it with my older sister, who is a teenager. And what's really funny is that it kind of set what I imagine high school to be.
Ah, that's interesting.
Like, this is what I imagine high school would be. There would be cliques. There would be the cool girls. There would be the artsy fartsy kids. There would be the theater geeks. And so I prepared for that. But then my reality was a Gen Z world where no one cared about labels. Labels were actually quite uncool. And if you tried to stick to them, it made you question yourself a bit. And so that was actually sort of lovely, getting to like have that sort of change. Or because I saw Mean Girls, I knew I was not going to go into the, I wasn't going to go into high school inside in the closet. I was like, F everyone else, I'm gonna be my queer and proud self that's too gay to function. And so, and then watching the movie, or the newest, the 2024 movie, or 2023, I loved it, because there was some homages to the original film. We saw Tina Fey. We saw the principal.
Tim Meadows.
And yes, we see Lindsay Lohan. And that was, I audibly gasped when I saw Lindsay Lohan as the sort of judge or the proctor to the to the mathletes contest. And it was heartwarming. And also the music is really great. Like the music is catchy and everyone has vocals. Like Renee Rapp, there's a reason why they brought her back. Like, my name is Regina George. And she had something, and Regina George had something to say. And also I think looking at Regina George and Regina George in 2024, I'm so glad that they made her this sort of like tough as nails, sort of like, yes, she's preppy. Yes, she comes from this wealthy background. But she's kind of gritty. She's kind of, she's kind of nasty, for lack of a better word. She's hot in a way that like 2004 Regina George was hot to the early,
a different
to
kind
the
of
early...
version. I totally get what you're saying, and I think that that's definitely something I like to see in adaptations like this, where they're thinking about how they approach a new version of the characters. And I don't love everything about Mean Girls, but I do appreciate when it tries to play around with dynamics. Like my favorite aspects of it ended up being the other two plastics, who I found really, I was familiar with one of them, but I didn't know the other. So it was really interesting seeing them. So I did know the girl who plays Gretchen. She's Baby Wood. I know her from the TV show Love, Victor. So I've seen her before. But it was nice seeing, you know, this TV small screen girl on a big screen. So I loved your earlier point about, you know, kind of like creating new stars. And I wasn't familiar with Avantika, who plays Karen, who I really want to say is my favorite in the movie. We have a South Asian Karen as opposed to her, you know, blonde Karen from 2004. And I feel like she has the most interesting song adaptation, because they adapt her song as kind of like an Instagram post. And so she's prepping for Halloween and she's, you know, on her live. And I really like that particular number, because I feel like it was thinking about how I want to adapt a musical for this particular era. It really felt thoughtful. I didn't get that with all the other numbers, but I really like that entire run up to that, and then it ends with her little zinger, and it's just a really fun, exciting bit. So yeah, definitely in with the plastics and the amendations, you know, to the original film.
And this is the thing: the plastics had a not a charm, but there was something so much more that you were rooting for these plastics comparatively to the original film. Whereas like the plastics were girls that were sort of a bit harder to access, harder to reach, or especially like for me, I was like, I don't know who these girls are. And like, I'm rooting for like Katie in the, from the beginning. Whereas like Avantika and Bibi, there's a lot more like humanity in them. But
well,
I will
think it's
say,
definitely something I see in the movie generally. Like it's definitely a warmer Mean Girls than the original one. I mean, yeah, that's definitely true. I've got like no argument there. Which, you know, different times.
True. Also, a question that I have for you: do you know if Bibi Wood is Latina? Because that was something that they interestingly slid in there, that I was just like, ooh.
I was wondering that also. But I mean, definitely something, you know, the film is obviously very you know, intentional about its casting, and definitely a lot less white school world. I was actually thinking, though, because I think the first thing I actually text Jose, who is, you know, all podcasters, you know who Jose is. I checked him after the movie, actually, saying that I actually wish that instead of casting Angourie Rice, they had actually cast O'Leary, who plays Janice, as Katie. Because for one reason, the new Mean Girls kind of falls down for me is that I never believed that Angourie Rice is a threat to Rhaenyra. She can't. She doesn't have a strong voice. She's not as good as an actor. She isn't giving that oomph. She just doesn't have that. And I mean, I feel like that's essential to the story. Like when you watch 04 Mean Girls, I believe that Lindsay Lohan can overpower Rachel McAdams because those are two bad bitches with equal slay. I don't feel that watching this new Mean Girls. I would have believed Janice as Katie. You know, she has pipes, she has that energy, and I could see her doing that. So it really was, I feel like if you're gonna bring in someone like Renee Rapp, who's played the role before, who's so knowledgeable on it, I think you're kind of setting up the Katie in a tough way. Think of it this way. You bring someone like Fantasia from Color Purple, who's played this role for decades, and then instead of giving her Taraji, you give her, I don't know, her a Suge. I love her, but it would be a different kind of energy because, you know, her doesn't have that. I feel like that's why we needed
her
a Taraji a Suge. Exactly.
Her was perfect for Squeak. Not gonna
and that's
lie.
Why I and that's why I really like the new Color Purple because I feel like they think a lot about how these actors work with each other. Like Taraji Shook wouldn't work opposite Cynthia Erivo's Feely. They're different kind of performers, you know?
Okay. Yes.
It wouldn't work. Like they're both great actresses, but the dynamics wouldn't work. Like Cynthia is so sharp. Her voice is pitched differently. Like they wouldn't blend. But Fantasia and Taraji make sense. And I'd like that I could see them thinking about these actors in relation to each other. Because I mean it's all well and nice to like cast somebody who's good on a headshot. But are we thinking about how, you know, these bodies are working with each other or how, you know, this life melds? And I feel like in musicals, which are so dependent on ensembles, you want to see that energy. You know, I like when I look at, you know, the interviews of the Color Purple cast, like those actors, like you can tell that they're like emotionally in sync with each other. Like I don't think the movie's perfect, but I like the Color Purple a lot, and I'm really happy that it's up for a Screen Actors Guild Awards for Best Cast because like I feel the cast of that movie working with each other, which
it was
you don't
a true
always get.
Ensemble.
Yeah.
If I think Mean Girls has lots of powerhouse actors and actresses and some standout people, but what Color Purple had was an ensemble.
Yep.
And
it really
I think
is important for that, I think. I mean, just like we're talking about Mean Girls, do you have any kind of deep relationship with the original Color Purple? Because I know for many people, that has kind of been an important kind of distinction how they come to this new one, which I found really interesting.
Well, for me, Color Purple was something introduced to me later. I had always heard about the Color Purple. It was always on late night on cable. And then once I got into theater, one of my mentors was like, you need to rewatch the Color Purple. And so I sat down and I was like, whoa, what is this movie, this sort of, even like that back then, this movie with such queer undertones about like Black love and also this like relationship between Black women and the intricacies of it. Where was this all my life? But it was also a movie of its time. Not to say like it wasn't groundbreaking, but it didn't talk as much about this aspect of like queer love and queer relationships and the intimacy between Black women as it does now. I think.
Yeah, and of course, and for those who've read the book, and you should all read Alice Walker's novel, which is not.
Right.
I mean, that book gets into sex. It's
yes.
It's literary detailed. And definitely one thing the new Color Purple does is that at least we see a romantic kiss between Suge and Feely. But I have to say that as much as I like the new Color Purple, I I was disappointed that it didn't go further because the actual play, The Color Purple, is a lot more gay than the movie based on the play. And the play came out in early 2000s. You know, how are we? It felt like a regression to me because, like, in the adaptation of the novel, I mean, the novel is really quite queer. And yes. Obviously, at the time, people were like, okay, 1985, nobody's gonna, you know, support that. And so there's just the undertone in the original movie. The newer movie does a bit better. They get an entire love song. But
yeah,
something that I was telling someone who didn't know, in the original play, Steely sings "I'm Here" after Shug wants to go off sleeping with a young guy she's taken up with. So Steely's big number is a reaction to the sapphic love. And I feel that the film loses some of that because one thing I kept thinking about watching The Color Purple and thinking about the various adaptations, the first adaptation definitely emphasized Shug and Celia as sisters. And that beautiful song that Quincy Jones composes from the original movie is in this new movie, which is not in the play. And I feel that having Shug sing the song Sister to Celia after, you know, the romantic love scene kind of plays down that queer love aspect. And it kind of made me feel like they almost got it just perfect, but then it just felt like they just weren't completely, you know, ready to just completely stand in that. Which so it was sort of a slightly frustrating part of it for me, even though I still appreciated it, you know, doing more than the original film.
No, of course. I think Hollywood has yet to push the gay agenda as much as the queers.
People think that they are. Everyone thinks they're pushing the agenda, but not hard enough.
They're really just stepping their toe in the water. They're like, queer. This is a little gay. But I think, well, depending on how Bear looks, when Bear is released, as well as like Spring Awakening, we'll see how, especially in the genre of movie musicals, this will continue. And like we see queer relationships on stage and on screen.
I think one of the reasons I was so like, thinking about the queer dynamic in Color Purple, though, is that we both know that as much as Hollywood and, you know, theater at large and film at large might be developing more of a language to deal with queerness on screen, Black queer women are still very much underrepresented. And I feel that it is an essential part of the dynamism of the Color Purple to think about what it means to be a queer Black woman. Thinking about, you know, the struggles, the pain, but also the joy and the happiness. And even though, like I said, I feel like the new movie doesn't get as queer enough, I am super grateful because that scene where Celia and Shug sing their love song and they imagine themselves as actors in a movie. So they're watching themselves on screen. I think it's just a beautiful sequence when they walk down the staircase and they're both, you know, beautifully dressed. And it feels magical. It feels magical. Like, I really think that scene gets, you know, the tenderness and the softness of that in a way that I really appreciated. Especially because, I don't know what it was like for you, but I live in Guyana and people are still, I mean, they're still weird about queerness. And I'm not going to lie, when they kissed on screen in the cinema, people audibly were not having it. And I was like, fuck you. Like, that's why I kind of wish they went for it, just to be like, okay, now let's see some real queer action. But I think that even something as tender as that is so important for, you know, Black women, dark-skinned Black women on screen.
Right. This is why I think even showing that kiss, it goes a bit further than the original film, and even that scene, and even the sort of like subtleties and the nuances of how we see like when Shug goes off with Mister and Celia just watches her go with him, and she's like heartbroken, and you see that. Her heartbreak there. But there's also, I think there's also the public and the audiences who are coming to see this film and the audiences who know that this is like a Black classic, or this, well, it's a classic in period, But like to the Black community, The Color Purple is a classic for who the original actors were, for Whoopi Goldberg, for Oprah. And to come back and return to this film, it's really sad, but I don't think many Black audiences would have been ready to see a more radical queer story.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I'm sure audiences listening may have heard that, you know, the rapper Booty Badass walked out of The Color Purple after the kiss. There was a big Twitter star about this, and I kept thinking, like, these people are so fragile. They're so fragile. But I kept thinking about another musical, watching The Color Purple, because they both are connected to Steven Spielberg. So Steven Spielberg famously did a new adaptation of West Side Story a few years ago. And because he was kind of like updating that for a new audience, you know. And so now we have a movie that was originally done by Steven Spielberg, a white man, now directed by a Black man. So there's that kind of updating. And I personally preferred the original West Side Story and The Color Purple, but I also think that the new Color Purple for me does a lot more in terms of presenting its case to the audience in the way that the new West Side Story didn't. Like, I know that the general position is that Spielberg's newer West Side Story is a better movie, or at least a better musical recently. But for me, I think the new Color Purple is doing something different than the movie, that I can appreciate them both. I get the logic that a new version of a new movie is somehow erasing the original one. It's still there. It's still, we're still able to, you know, watch it and appreciate it. And something that my sister, who's a big fan of the original movie, said when she watched this one with me, is that she said she found the sisterhood theme a lot more emphasized in this newer version. And I actually agree with her, because you said something that I thought about when you said that this movie feels like an ensemble movie. It doesn't feel like a movie about Seed. It feels like a movie about this entire community. And it's different in that way, but I think that there is a space and a value for that. Like, one of my favorite moments in the new movie is when, after Celie is able to, you know, take back the shop from her dead father, and she has her store, and it's the image of her and all the women singing out her pants, and it's Shug, and it's Sophia, and it's Squeak, and it's Celie, and it just feels like a nice moment, you know, in a way that's really kind of like take it home. And it just, it feels a lot less bleak than the first one. So like, I understand personally, like, oh, people who are like, oh, it wasn't hard enough, but we do have that version. This one is doing something softer. We don't need another. Exactly. Like, it's doing something different, I think. So like, I can appreciate that it's not, for me, this new movie is best the more it tries to distance itself from that original.
Right.
Like, whenever it tries to retread moments from the movie, I'm like, no, do your own thing. Don't try to, you know, don't bring back Sister from that version. Don't, you know, change this to fit that. Like, do your own thing. You don't need to be recreating that. You already have that one.
Right. I can definitely see the moments where it was trying to create those iconic moments from the original movie. But I hear what you're saying, that I wouldn't call it softer. I think it's just, there's something more, especially as an audience, as someone watching the original movie, there's some sort of separation or a distance that the heart, or like the tough and more bleaker moments of the original movie, in terms of like sexual assault, in terms of seeing your baby in the arms of another family, versus like within the new updated movie musical, is just like what makes the moments of sexual assault that much more gut-wrenching is the moments of like pure joy, because you know how beautiful this world can be and how easily it can take that away. And how, or like when Sophia is in jail and and knowing what Steely did to Sophia, and having like Sophie having Steely tell Harpo, beat her, beat your woman, and I feel, or let me gather myself. seeing how someone can betray someone, but then ultimately still like love that person. Yeah. And like also having been hurt, and having Sophia been hurt by Steely, also recognize how much Steely loved Sophia.
And how much she's able to change.
Yes. That
definitely.
Also, the way The Color Purple ends is so beautiful.
It ends with a beautiful ensemble number. And I feel that like, if you're a musical and you're not ending with your entire cast singing, then what are you doing? I think the best movie musical of this century for me is inarguably Rob Marshall's Chicago. And I always reference that because I think that it's changed the face of contemporary musicals for good and for bad. Because something that he did in that movie that was so, you know, sharp. I mean, it was written by Bill Condon, directed by Rob Marshall. And they had this idea that they were going to stage all the musical numbers in Roxy's imagination. Because everything in Chicago was from her perspective. And
right.
It makes sense in Chicago because Roxy is the producer, director. She's everything. She is her own woman. But I feel that since then, musicals have been staging musical sequences in imaginary planes for reasons that don't always make sense. Like just have the characters singing normally. You don't have somebody imagine them singing. Like just let them sing. I feel like Color Purple is able to, they kind of fall into this trap in some ways because a lot of the musical numbers from Steely's mind are imagined. But the reason I'm able to kind of gel with it more is that when Steely finally gets her big I'm Here number at the end of the movie, it's not in her imagination. It's in her shop and it's her there alone. So I feel like there's at least an attempt in The Color Purple to kind of like not to reject that, you know, we can't sing in the real world. Like it even opens with the entire, you know, church, you know, singing in the streets and whatnot. And I kind of like that. It's similar in Mean Girls. Like I kind of wish some of the musical numbers weren't imagined, but I did like some of the ways that they imagined them. So like I mentioned earlier, the Instagram song for Karen Sexy. And then there's when Katie and her and Janice and Damien are deciding to mess Regina's life up. There's this revenge party song, which I can't tell if I like or not, but it's definitely doing something ambitious. Like, how did you find the staging of the musical sequences in both of them?
So, from a dramaturgical perspective, everything's starting to be justified. The thing about musical and musical theaters is that when people don't just break into song and dance in real life, which is why I think in the context, especially of of cinema, it's kind of a crutch to like go into this sort of dream sequence. It's kind of a crutch to like pull out and say, okay, we can start singing and dancing because this is not real. And this doesn't happen in real time. But for me, and kind of like you said, for me, it's justified in The Color Purple because part of these musical numbers are an escape from the like sort of bleak reality that is the storyline, which is also
I really feel that they did that. Well, I feel like a lot of persons who didn't like the film kind of aren't giving it credit for that. Like I really feel like what you said is so important. Like you are correct completely. The film does justify it really and give that the numbers as that kind of escape for Steely.
Whereas with Mean Girls, I think Mean Girls, it's a harder sell to say. It can't be High School Musical all over. It can't be another High School Musical. Like, no one is going. If I went to high school and someone started busting out singing and dancing, I'm going to be that one hater who's going to be like, why are y'all singing and dancing? Get to class. I have
but like, isn't that like the responsibility of the film to make me believe that this could happen? Like suspend my disbelief. I feel like if they keep using the crutch of the imagination, then you're not doing the hard work of making us believe that this makes sense.
True. You have a point. And I think the example of Chicago taking on this sort of different lens and this perspective is so true and so great, because this what's so great about film is that you can really open, you can really explode the box, destroy the box, recreate the box, because you are not confined to a stage. But in our closing moments, what are you anticipating for the future of movie musicals? Do you think that there is a future for music, for movie musicals?
Oh, definitely. There is always a space for them. I think, like, veering back to my opening when I was talking about standing on business if you're a musical, I really feel that until people who make musicals are full-throatedly, like, announcing it, people who love them are all going to be embarrassed to love them. I feel that it comes from, if something is trying to be famous, you need to have that confidence. You can't apologize for your musicality. You can't, you know, try to, like, contextualize it. And I feel like that comes with casting people who can sing and act and perform. I mean, you know, cast more, you know, I mean, I don't, she's not my favorite in the movie, but cast more Renee Rapp. Cast more Fantasias. And one thing I really appreciated from Taraji over the course of the press for the show is talking about how much she worked on training her voice. Like she's I really appreciated that kind of dedication and commitment. Like, she didn't take this carelessly. She said, you know, I want to be able to match Fantasia. I don't want to let down my lead. And I think that that's what we need, people who really care about the craft. Once we get that, anything's possible. You know, just get people who like musicals, who want to be in musicals, who want to, you know, do the vocal rest, the warm-ups, do the work of the voice as a muscle, and to make the craft. But I think once we've got that, anything can happen.
Beautiful. And what musical would you like to see created, like produced as a film, or made for film?
Well, in honor of the recently deceased Chita Rivera, I really think that there is a need for an adaptation of The Visit, the really creepy, eerie, Ebb Kander musical that I really wish Chita would have been alive to star in. So rest in peace, Chita. We love you. What about you? What musical are you looking forward to in the next years or so?
I think, well, a lot of my favorite music, or a lot of my favorite musicals have already sort of, or are coming up and having their own sort of movie musical adaptation, like Spring Awakening, Wicked, Passing Strange, which is another, I think Passing Strange as is, it doesn't need another remake. But if I have to think, I would love to see Hades Town.
Oh,
just because I think Hades Town is so magical, that, and the atmosphere that that ensemble also gives to Hades Town, of this sort of underworld, and
so much cinematic potential.
Exactly, that I really want to see this sort of like industrial underworld that's being built, and these two characters go on this journey. So
you heard it from us here, The Visit and Hades Town, upcoming movie musicals. We have our dramaturgs here. We just need some funding.
Come on now. We are talking to you. We are looking for funders. Make this happen, people.
And while you're at it, you can catch Mean Girls and The Color Purple, which I think are both in cinemas. And I know that ColourPop is coming to streaming at the end of the month. You can also stream their cast recordings. Which cast recording are you listening to immediately after this? ColourPop or Mean Girls?
I am listening to The Color Purple. Actually, I think I'm gonna go watch The Color Purple again because I was bawling, but Renee Rapp does have my heart.
So
Love
Rene
you,
Rapp,
girl.
basically what we need Rene Rapp doing a cover of a Color Purple song for you.
No. No. Love you, girl.
But
Don't
no.
push it. Don't make me cancel you now.
So thank you guys for listening to another episode of Token Theater Friends. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the current state of movie musicals, and you can catch me on my dormant Twitter account as of a year and a half at the handle Departed Aviator. You can catch me in my film column, which is coming back next month, Real Encounters to Eve with Andrew Kendall. Grayson, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Instagram at Grayson.Raphael, no vowels because she's different. She's quirky. To find more about my day-to-day life living in Madrid and trying to navigate the queer and Black POC theater scene and performance scene.
Well, thank you for that. And everyone listening, have a super musical rest of the week. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.